Chapter 17. It feels awfully strange to be wearing pajamas in the afternoon, and it feels particularly unnerving to be in a courthouse wearing such wholly inappropriate attire. One of Detective Stark's police officers kindly drove me to this courthouse about an hour ago, and now I'm seated in a cramped office on the premises with a very young man who will serve as my attorney in the bail hearing. He asked me my name, reviewed the charges against me, told me we'd be called into the courtroom when the judge was ready, and then claimed he had some emails to read. He took out his phone and has been giving it his fullest attention for at least 5 minutes. I have no idea what I'm supposed to do in the meantime. No matter. This allows me time to collect myself. I know from TV that as the accused, I should be wearing a clean blouse, buttoned to the neck, and formal dress slacks. I most certainly should not be wearing pajamas. "Excuse me," I say to the young attorney, "would it be possible to go home and change before the hearing?" His face scrunches up.
"You can't be serious," he replies. "Do you know how lucky you are to be seen today?"
"I am serious," I say. "Quite." He puts his phone in his breast pocket.
"Wow, do I have some news for you."
"Excellent. Please share it, post haste," I reply. But he doesn't utter a word. He just stares at me with his mouth open, which surely means I've made some blunder, but what it is I do not know. Moments later, he proceeds to fire questions my way.
"Have you ever done jail time?"
"Not until this morning," I say.
"That wasn't jail," he says. "Jail's way worse than that." "Do you have a criminal record?"
"My record is squeaky clean, thank you very much."
"Do you harbor plans of leaving the country?"
"Oh, yes. I'd love to visit the Cayman Islands someday. I've heard it's lovely. Have you been?"
"Just tell the judge you have no plans of leaving the country," he says.
"As you wish."
"The hearing won't take long. They're pretty standard, even in criminal cases like yours. I'll try to get you free on bail. I'm assuming that, like everyone else who's ever been accused, you're not guilty and you want out on bail because you're the sole caregiver for your poor, sick grandmother, right?"
"I was, but not anymore," I say. "She's dead. And I'm not guilty on any of the charges, of course."
"Right. Of course," he replies.
I'm grateful for his instant vote of confidence. I'm about to get into the details of my complete innocence, but his phone buzzes in his pocket.
"We're up," he says. "Let's go."
He leads me out of the small office, down a hallway, and into a much larger room with benches on both sides and a wide aisle in the middle. I'm walking down the aisle with him to the front of the courtroom. For a moment, I imagine a similar room, with a similar aisle, with a big difference that in my imagination, I'm walking down the aisle as a bride-to-be, and the man beside me is not this stranger at all, but a man very known to me. My flight of fancy is rudely interrupted when my young attorney says,
"Take a seat,"
and points to a chair in front of a table to the right of the judge. As I sit, Detective Stark walks into court and seats herself at an identical chair in front of an identical table across the chasm of the aisle. I feel my jitters return. I clasp my hands tightly in my lap to quell my trembling. Someone says, "All rise," and I feel the young attorney's hand on my elbow guiding me to my feet. The presiding judge emerges from a door at the back of the court and plods to his high bench, sitting down in front of it with an audible groan. I do not mean it unkindly when I say that he reminds me of a Brazilian horned frog. Gran and I watched a tremendous documentary about the Amazon rainforest and the Brazilian horned frog. Such a unique creature. It has a long, downturned mouth and protuberant eyebrows, much like the judge before me. The proceedings begin immediately, with the judge asking Detective Stark to speak. She presents the charges against me. She says many things about the Black case and about my involvement in it. She makes it seem like I'm not a reliable person, but it's the end of her diatribe that stings the most.
"Your Honor," she says, "the charges against Molly Gray are very serious. And while I'm aware that the accused before you presents as a picture of innocence and not a flight risk at all, she has proven herself unreliable. Much like the Regency Grand Hotel where she works, which by all appearances is a fine, upstanding hotel, the more we probe into the life of Molly and her workplace, the more dirt we uncover.
If I could, and it were my place to do so, I'd bang a gavel and yell, "Objection!" just like they do on TV. The judge doesn't move at all, but he does interrupt.
"Detective Stark, may I remind you that the hotel is not the subject of this hearing, nor can a hotel stand trial. Can you please get to the point?"
Detective Stark clears her throat. "The point is that we are beginning to question the nature of the connection between Molly Gray and Mr. Black. We've gathered significant evidence of illegal activity between Mr. Black and the seemingly innocent young hotel maid you see before you. I'm deeply concerned about her moral integrity and her ability to abide by the rule of law. In other words, Your Honor, this is a prime example of appearances being deceiving." I find this incredibly insulting. I may have my faults, but it's balderdash and poppycock to suggest that I don't follow rules. I've devoted my entire life to just that, even when the rules are entirely unsuited to my constitution. The young attorney is directed to speak on my behalf. He talks quickly and flails his arms dramatically. He explains to the judge that I have a squeaky clean criminal record, that I lead a woefully uneventful life, am gainfully employed in a menial position offering zero flight risk, that I have never in all my years left the country and have occupied the same address for 25 years, ergo, my entire life. In closing, he poses a question.
"Does this young woman really fit the profile for a dangerous criminal and a runner? I mean, really. Take a good look at who you have in front of you. Something doesn't add up."
The judge's frog-like jowls are resting on his hands. His eyes are droopy and half-closed.
"Who's posting bail?"
he asks.
"An acquaintance of the accused," the young attorney answers.
The judge checks a paper in front of him.
"Charlotte Preston."
The judge's eyes open slightly and fall on me.
"Friends in high places, I see,"
he says. "Not usually, Your Honor," I answer, "but lately, yes. Also, I wish to apologize for my wholly inappropriate attire. I was arrested at my front door at an inopportune hour of the early morning and was not afforded a chance to dress in a respectful manner that befits your court." I don't know if I was supposed to speak, but it's too late now. My young attorney's mouth is wide open, but he's giving me no clues as to what I should do or say. After a sizable pause, the judge speaks.
"We won't judge you on the basis of your teapots, Miss Gray, but on your propensity to obey the rules and to stay put."
His impressive eyebrows undulate to accentuate his words. "That's welcome news, Your Honor. I'm actually quite gifted when it comes to obeying rules."
"Good to know," he replies.
The young attorney remains completely quiet. Since he's not venturing a word in my defense, I carry on. "Your Honor, I consider myself most fortunate to have made a couple of friends several rungs above my station, but I'm just a maid, you see. A hotel maid. A wrongly accused one."
"You're not standing trial today, Miss Gray. You understand that if we grant you bail, your movements will be restricted. Home, work, and the city only."
"That accurately summarizes my circumnavigations up to this point in my life, Your Honor, minus travel and nature documentaries on TV, which I'm assuming don't count since they occur from the relative comfort of an armchair. I have no intention nor financial ability to expand my geographic reach, nor would I know how to go about travel all on my own. I'd be worried I wouldn't know the rules in a foreign place, and that I'd make a fool of myself." I pause, then realize my faux pas. "Your Honor," I add hastily, with a quick curtsy. One side of the judge's long amphibious mouth curls up into something resembling a smile.
"I'd hate for anyone here today to be making a fool of themselves," the judge says.
Then he looks at Detective Stark, who for the first time in the proceedings does not meet his eye.
"Miss Gray," the judge pronounces, "I hereby grant you your conditional bail. You're free to go."